Did you know that there are over 3.2 million podcasts in the world? It seems like everybody these days has a podcast. But did you also know that 90% of those podcasts fail to make it to 20 episodes? There are various reasons for these failures, but one reason is that people don't know what they're doing. Shocking, right? As it turns out, the same reason why people don't operate on themselves also applies to podcast success. You want to talk to someone who has had success launching and marketing podcasts. Somebody like Juliana Barbati. Juliana runs a podcast marketing and production agency, and their team takes care of everything for you, making this process a breeze. All their info is in the show notes. You can go to julianabarbati.com, tell them TGFB sent you, and get a discount when paying in Bitcoin. That's right. Juliana is a Bitcoiner. Her and her husband were actually Bitcoiners before they were Christians. And so it's been great for us to work with them. They basically came to us and said, hey, we'd love to help you guys, help TGFB grow. And so we'd love to kind of apply our services to you guys. So go ahead and support them. If you have a podcast you're working on or one that you'd like to start, go ahead and check them out. Now let's get to today's show. Mark Sanders, welcome to the Thank God for Bitcoin podcast.
Thanks. It's good to be on.
All right, Mark, this is our second time hanging out and talking. We got connected through, man, one of the people I honestly respect most in the world, the Reverend Tim Fox. So why don't you kind of give us an intro to who you are, what you do, and on top of that, how you met Tim?
Yeah, so I'm coming from the Philadelphia area. This is kind of where I was born and raised, and I'm still here. I had a brief stint in South Korea, which I'll talk about a little bit later. But yeah, I work at a ministry called Harvest USA, which is a ministry that deals with issues of sexual struggles and sexual brokenness and how the gospel brings about hope and transformation to people who are affected by these issues and also their families and churches that are affected by these things as well. And so we exist both to minister to individuals and families who are dealing with these things, but also help the church, help pastors, help ministry leaders know how they can minister to their congregations, because we really do believe that these issues are fundamentally something that the church is called to disciple their people in, and that the gospel speaks clearly and profoundly into them. And so, yeah, that's kind of what I'm doing. I'll definitely give a further history to kind of how I got to where I'm at in this ministry for sure.
Awesome. Appreciate you sharing that. And so how'd you meet Tim? I mean, listeners to this podcast know Tim. Tim's spoken at both of our Thank God for Bitcoin national conferences. And again, I'm hoping he's going to be there this year as well. So, but how did you come across Tim?
Yeah. So this bleeds into my Bitcoin story for sure. So long story short, I got your book, Thank God for Bitcoin. And that was one of the first books I got and really appreciated it. Had my dad read it. And so it was through the book that I learned about your organization. Then I started finding the conferences. And I think it was through the conferences that I found out about Tim and listened to his messages and really appreciated them. And found out that Tim was in the PCA. And Harvest USA is not officially connected to the PCA, but we are very much, that's kind of our roots. So we were birthed out of 10th Presbyterian Church, which is a PCA church in Philadelphia. So I was going to the PCA General Assembly last year. And I emailed him, said, hey, I've gone down the Bitcoin rabbit hole. I'm wondering if you're going to be at the General Assembly. If you are, I'd love to grab lunch with you. And he said, no, I'm not going to be there. I'm going on sabbatical for a little while, but I'd love to connect outside of that. And so we connected after the GA and I think hit it right off. And then he was mentioning you and I was like, oh yeah, I'm very familiar with Jordan and their podcast and their book. And so yeah, that's kind of how things happened.
That's so funny. Did he tell you, I'm sure he did. Did he tell you that he presented about Bitcoin at the previous General Assembly?
Yes, actually, not. You're jogging my memory. That actually might be the first time I heard him. So I thought he did a great job. I'm wondering how much he was in a hostile environment in that setting, because he definitely got a fair amount of pushback in the Q&A. But I thought he did a great job representing realistically, faithfully. So
yeah, the General Assembly, is it June every year? When is it?
I think it's in May this year, but roughly May and June. It might be June, but yeah, it's around that time.
Wanted to go. I was like interested in going this past year, but it was right before our conference. I might go this year because, again, I want to get out to some more Christian events. I've gone to a few Christian conferences and we've had good feedback. And I went to one conference like a year and a half ago, I guess. And it was a 3-day conference. I sat and stood for 6 hours a day for 3 straight days and just answered questions about Bitcoin to varying levels of skepticism and all kinds of stuff. But yeah, so hopefully get out to the PCA and Orange Pills and Presbyterians. But yeah, okay, so let's kind of get into what your backstory. Like, how did you get to the place where, you know, you're working in the context that you are? What did that look like?
Yeah, so basically, I have always had this passion. I always wanted to do a job that wasn't just a job, but something that I truly was passionate about. And so I always had that sense that that was where the Lord would lead me in one way or another. And initially, I thought that was going to be through making films. So I was into acting a lot and doing video kind of work. And so all throughout my senior year of high school into college, I was making movies constantly. I like to joke that I'm kind of a pioneer of YouTube. Most of my videos are not on YouTube anymore, but back in like 2004, I was uploading student films onto YouTube. And I thought, yeah, this is what I'm going to do. It's going to be really meaningful. I'm going to make kind of Christian-themed films that were probably edgier than normal Christian films, but definitely had a message that was deep and meaningful. And so that's what I thought I was going to do. And grew up in a Christian home, a great, solid biblical church.
Just real quick, did you grow up at 10th?
I did not. So yeah, I grew up in the suburbs of Philly in a denomination called the Bible Fellowship denomination, which is a really small denomination that's really mainly in Pennsylvania. And it was around middle school where I really started taking my faith seriously. And I remember just being like, you know, if God really is real, if he is true, then this is amazing. And what greater joy could I have than getting to know him better and live for him? And that had actually come out of a season of a lot of skepticism in my life about God, about the Bible. I remember fear is my first memory of God because I was fearful of hell. And I would tell people, I said, I wasn't sure if God was real, but I was pretty convinced hell was. And if I didn't believe in God, then I was probably going there. And so I remember being like 7 years old and being in my pastor's office and like, show me Golgotha, like prove to me that this really happened because I want some empirical evidence to kind of rest on. And I would say over a season, the Lord just, again, I would say the theme in my story is one where his goodness, his beauty, his glory, his love for me just kind of has dealt with so many issues in my life, including doubts. And I would say I've had doubts throughout my life. Even in college, I started really doubting the question of God's sovereignty. And if he's truly sovereign, how can you let these things happen if he's good and all these questions? But I would say the theme that kept coming back over and over again is that, Mark, what you're trying to rest in ultimately is your own understanding. You know, I'm doing the exact opposite of Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. I'm trying to rest in my own understanding and not in the character of the Father who loves you, who cares for you. And more than trusting in your own ability to grasp these things, trust in me as you come to me and abide in me. And so that's been a theme that he continually, I come back to by his grace. And so it was around middle school that I would say a lot of those initial doubts were not so much an issue. And it was much more the joy of God. I remember I had my first brother in Christ. I went to a Christian school as well, but in elementary school, we had Bible class, but I did not have Christian friendships, I would say. Our friendships were based on anything but Jesus. But it was around middle school where I started really connecting with one classmate in particular. And I was just like, do you pray? Do you actually love God? And he was like, you know what I do? And I was like, wow, like I do as well. And so we were just starting to connect. We were reading a book called by Jerry Bridges called The Pursuit of Holiness. And he actually lived on Westminster Seminary's campus. His father worked there and I would hang out at Westminster in middle school, just walking the grounds. And we would just talk about our relationship with God. And pretty early on, I started feeling like, you know what, my relationship is growing with the Lord. But around that same time is where sexual sin started to become an issue for me through things like masturbation and through just anything I could find on TV, basically, or trying to find movies that would have salacious scenes in them. So I shared, you know, I'm struggling with this issue in my life. And he kind of became my first accountability partner, if you want to call it that. And I just found that when we started to truly be known in these areas that typically produce so much shame and hiding, it actually deepened the relationship. It brought our relationship to a deeper level. And God and his plan for me just happened to bring more and more of those types of relationships into my life as I went to high school, is I would just have deeper Christian friends. And the majority of my friends I found were in similar place with me. We wanted to walk with Christ and we wanted to honor him. But this issue of self-control was really difficult for us. But it was also something that there was grace in that. And there was a desire to know Christ more through that and a desire to have relationships that weren't surfacey. And so I've never been one who wanted to have surface level relationships. I enjoy sports to a degree, but it's not what I want a relationship to be based around. So I'd much rather get to meaningful conversations with people. I think that kind of experience of my life really set me up to be able to relate to people on deeper levels and talk about things that most people typically are not quick to share. And what I found at Harvest and in my life in general is if you're willing to start, typically people feel safe to say, oh man, he's willing to go there. Maybe I can share with this person. They seem like someone who could understand and who wouldn't quickly jump all over me and all those things. So,
yeah, no, I have a very similar story. I shared this the last time we were talking and just kind of experienced a lot of the same things on both sides of that, you know, like just having come through and like by God's grace, been given grace to kind of exercise self-control in these ways. Like I have seen having walked through there, being able to kind of help others too, talk about these things and navigate them. And again, think about them and frame these issues, not in just, how dare you, you know, like all these kind of ways where instead of that, looking at this like, okay, no, but what are you actually trying to pursue? Like, what are you actually trying to pursue in your life? And how are you pursuing it? What is your goals for what you're doing and not doing? And so throughout middle school, high school, you grow in these ways. What did you go to college? At what point, you know, what did you want to do beyond those things? What did you want to study and work in? I guess, what was the point at which you kind of got to the point where you realized, hey, I really want to do this for my job. I think this would be an awesome thing to do.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, the work I'm doing is very much so interrelated with the growth that God has brought about in my life. And so I would say, you know, I was looking to go the film route, the indie route. So I went to Geneva College near Pittsburgh, and Geneva had a communications program with some video, but no one really who was really serious about like going to Hollywood typically would go to that school for that. And so I happened to just have kind of the entire film equipment to myself. I kept a lot of things in my dorm room because no one else really needed it. And so it was a great place to grow in that area and just have a lot of freedom to do what I wanted to do. I spent my senior year making this like feature length film, and a lot of people got involved in on the campus, and it was just a great time. So I really enjoyed that. But I would say two things that were not sexual sin related, but very much tied to the deeper heart issues that the Lord was starting to show me was, number one, that I didn't read my Bible every day in college, but I watched a movie every single day. And there was this idea of trying to find my worth, my value, my identity, and my performance, and particularly, could I make it in the film industry? And so there was clearly a distraction in that sense from pursuing the highest good and kind of settling for something that's not inherently wrong, but is not ultimate. And on top of that, there was also a deep desire to be in a relationship, to be in a dating relationship. And throughout middle school, high school, college, I never had a serious dating relationship. And it wasn't for lack of trying. there were many times where I would kind of put my heart out there and get the friend card played. So I was like, oh, Mark, you're a great guy. You're a great friend. So my heart was getting more and more mangled with every rejection. And I think that did play into, okay, well, I keep getting rejected here, but pornography never rejects me. My fantasy world, I never get rejected there. So there were definitely these idols going on in my life where I was saying, God, you've been good to me on many levels, and I do want to live for you, but I'm kind of going to compartmentalize you, and you're going to have this space in my life, but you're not truly all to me. You know, Jesus talks about forsaking all else. And if you can't be my disciple. He even talks about hating your own father and mother. And, you know, a lot of theologians will say what Jesus means by, unless you hate your father and mother, you can't be my disciple. The thing he says, well, you love Jesus so much that in comparison to that, it looks like hatred. But I think that makes sense. But on some level, I think the deeper understanding of that is when you come to Christ, he is your all in all, which means that you love your father and mother. You love others for the sake of Christ, through Christ, that he truly is all in all. And so that was just not the way I was living. He had his corner in my heart, but there were a lot of other things vying for that supremacy. And so basically after college, I go off to South Korea to teach English. And I did that mainly, I think, out of a sense of I just wanted to have some adventure. I've found some Korean friends in college who got me interested in the movies and the culture. And so I was like, let me just go here. I tried to make a film in Philadelphia the summer after I graduated, and I just hated the process. They were talking about, you got to have a budget for catering. And I'm like, catering? What are you talking about? Like, you know, so I was just like, you know, I just need to step away from this. I fully stepped away. I did not touch a video camera for years after college, but I went to South Korea to teach English. And if you're an American in Korea, usually 99% of the time, you're either teaching English or you're in the military. And at the time, it was a very popular thing to do. And 1 year turned into 5 years. And I didn't initially expect that, but that's what the Lord had for me. And it was in Korea where I would say he was doing a combination of showing me that all the things I was living for weren't worth it. And he was also showing me that he is worth it. It was particularly in my third year that I was there. And my first year was pretty lonely. I had some friends, but not really a community. I was going to church every week, but it was a large church and wasn't really having a community, I would say, there.
Did you go over to Korea with anybody that you knew, or did you just met people when you were there?
Yeah, I had some friends. Actually, the friends I knew in college had gone there to do, there's mandatory military service in Korea. So they were there doing their mandatory military service. So I knew some people there, but I kind of went on my own, by and large. But it was in the second year that I was there that I got involved in an evangelistic campus outreach at one of the universities in Seoul. And it was basically an English club that we were trying to build relationships and share the gospel, invite them to church. And it was there that a community really started to form for me. And it was also during that time that I started really getting into podcasts for sermons. And so just downloading and kind of binging a lot of different sermons, especially my third year that I was there. And a combination of all of these things, I started leading a small group in my church, but still having ongoing struggles with lust and temptation and giving over to those things.
Let me ask you real quick, who are you listening to? What kind of sermon?
Yeah, I talk about it as my John Piper phase. He was definitely the most frequent one. And particularly what I really appreciated, he would do these pastors' conferences every year. And every year he would do a biography of a different church history figure. And those in particular were extremely impactful for me. I would ride, my boss at the school I was at gave me a bike, and I would just ride my bike through. Seoul has these amazing rivers and streams throughout the city. And so I would just ride for hours and listen to these sermons and these biographies and just get so, like the classic, I want my life to count. I want to live kind of abandoned to the Lord's purposes for me. And seeing that if you do that, suffering will be a very big part of that, but saying that I'm willing to do whatever it takes and having, I think, somewhat of a rosy picture of that at the time, but also being somewhat open to the idea that, yeah, this won't be easy, but Jesus is worth it, I would say. And so yeah, but the way I described kind of what God was doing that third year is that he was ruling me through his goodness, through his love, in a way that the things that sin was offering me just weren't comparable anymore. And so the Thomas Chalmers sermon, the expulsive power of a new affection, is really what I was experiencing. And I was experiencing it on a lot of levels. So a few ways I was experiencing this was I would take a bike ride somewhere and just be in this deep time of worship and abiding in Christ. Then I would go back to my apartment and be like, okay, am I going to give in to sin tonight? Or am I just going to watch some TV that's clearly just not glorifying to God and just unhealthy? And I started seeing the emptiness of that more and more. And also, I was getting involved in these ministries. And so I would have these rich, deep times of fellowship with God's people, getting to share the gospel. And it's just like, this is what life is about. And then I would go back to my apartment and be like, but this is Esho's telling me that this is life, that this will give you life. And I'm like, and it started to just, the veneer started to come off. And the reality of what it really was being shown more and more to me. And on top of that, the Lord had still not brought anyone into my life. And I was seeing just I think it was during that time that I was really seeing how much the idolatry of a relationship, of getting married, was starting to become much more clear to me, that this was something to repent of. I needed to repent of a disordered worship that was going on in my heart.
Can you kind of unpack that a little bit? So were you actively thinking, if I just get married, this is going to fix everything? It's going to fix all my problems? Or
Yeah, you know what? Sadly, I don't even think I was thinking so much about marriage fixing this. It was a simpler desire of just, I'm lonely and I want to be married and I want to be in a relationship. And I joke with people that, you know, I grew up in the era of TV shows like Saved by the Bell and Boy Meets World and these sitcoms that were geared at kids to say, like, what's the ultimate experience in life? It's having a girlfriend. It's having your first kiss, all these types of things. And so, yeah, it was really as simple as, God, you're not enough for me. And I remember thinking to myself, if God said, Mark, you could have me or you can have this thing that you want, but you have to choose, which would you choose? And I remember thinking, like, I'm not sure which I would choose, because clearly what I feel right now is that you are not sufficient for me, and probably res to some degree under the thought that maybe that was a worthwhile trade. And it reminds me of in Hebrews chapter 12, where it says, do not give in to sexual immorality and be like Esau, who traded his birthright for a bowl of lentils. And that's like, that was in Bitcoin language, that was high time preference thinking. Oh, yeah. Right there.
Yep.
It's just this idea of, okay, this leading pleasure, whether it's sex or a relationship that could be great for many decades, but it's not eternal ultimately. That whatever you're saying, I'll exchange eternity with the Lord, that beatific vision, for a bowl of lentils, basically. It's just, and sadly, many people make that trade. And really, whenever you aim for anything that's not eternal, you're making that trade. Whenever you're living for anything that will ultimately be taken from you at death, you're making that trade. So I would say he was really showing me the depth of my worship sin and where my worship was being directed in places that cannot satisfy, that will not last. And so I would say it was just all these things were coming together where his goodness was being more and more clear to me. My sin was being exposed and for the deeper issues that were going on, that it wasn't just going to be a behavior change. It had to be a heart change. And I would say it was in that third year that a lot of that heart change started to happen. And by God's grace, I started seeing, and I would say, you know, if I could go a couple of days without giving over to sin, that was good at the time. So when I started getting a week, 2 weeks, I was like, whoa, like this is new for me. And I knew that there was a momentum, a positive momentum in that growth in self-control, that growth in pursuing Christ, that I wanted to ride as long as I could. And so the longer that I was going, the more and more I was like, I want to maintain this. And typically for people in my situation, when you're really feeling yourself stuck in this habitual pattern of sin, you're counting the weeks, you're counting the months initially. So it was around maybe 3 months that the Lord did start to open up an opportunity to date my future wife. And I had seen the destruction that sexual sin, things like pornography, had in marriages of people that I knew. And I wanted desperately to be able to not have this issue impact our relationship. And the reality is it impacted it, even if I wasn't giving in, because the history of it is going to impact it. But by God's grace, there was a very healthy, probably sometimes unhealthy fear there to say, like, this will destroy me. This will destroy this relationship. And this is poison to avoid at every cost. And God has been just greatly faithful and gracious to me in that. And again, the best thing I can say is all of those sins, the idolatry of relationships, the idolatry of movies, the idolatry of sex, in the moment, it feels like if I give this up, life will be completely drained of any. Yeah, it's over. But the opposite happened every time. And the best thing, the one example I can give is one of my favorite directors was Quentin Tarantino. And I'm not going to make a judgment about whether or not a Christian should watch his movies. But for me, there was a point where I said, you know what? Tarantino is really probably not what my heart needs right now. And his movie Inglourious Basterds had just come out. And it was this turning point to say, will I watch this movie? Because I'd seen every single movie he had ever made before then. And he's like, if you're following a director, of course you're going to watch every movie they make. And I decided I'm not going to watch this movie. And I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know what life after that would mean for me.
Yeah.
But the way I describe it is my life went from black and white to color. And what I realize is that your world is only as big as what you worship. So if you worship the creation, if you worship movies, well, that's the extent of your world. That's the boundaries of your world. But if you worship the creator, the infinite God, your world is expanding and will never stop expanding. So God's been so faithful to show me the truth of those realities.
The TGFB podcast is brought to you by the TGFB 24 conference. Thank God for Bitcoin 2024 is happening July 24th and 25th in Nashville. This conference brings together some of the best minds in the church, the academy, and in Bitcoin to explore the biblical foundations and daily consequences of how money affects the incentives and outcomes of the world we live in. The name of the conference this year is Render to God, Stewardship, Dominion, and the Economics of Glory. We figured that an election year was the perfect time to examine the relationship between God, government, and money. We'll dive deep into what the Bible has to say about what money is, the role it plays in society, and why the principles governing money creation have such a huge and yet underappreciated effect on every aspect of our world. I'll be speaking alongside pastors and respected Christian figures like C.R. Wiley, Thomas Terry, Eric Hirschman, Glenn Sunshine, and many more. Tickets are limited, so use promo code TGFB24 to save 10% today before prices increase. You can also, for a limited time, if you would like to bring your wife with you, we would love for you to do that. We would love husbands to be able to bring their wives, and so we are offering 80% off tickets for wives who want to accompany their husbands. So that means you can get two tickets today for $300 by using promo code COUPLE at checkout at tgfb.com/store. Go ahead, run over and do that. We'd love to have husbands and wives together to talk about these very important topics. This is a one-of-a-kind community experience at the intersection of theology, technology, ethics, finance, and economics. We hope to see you there. Okay, back to the show. Yeah, maybe unpack some of this. So like when you say, like, again, because we have people who aren't necessarily Christians who listen to this. And so when they hear like I idolized movies, like that just might sound insane or like, you know, preposterous. Like, did you have a shrine to Tarantino? I guess you could argue with movies, you kind of do. You actually do have like this little location where, you know, you can keep your DVDs or like, you know, you sit at this place and watch their movies. But like if you had to unpack and explain that to somebody who maybe who, you know, wasn't a Christian or something or didn't understand what you meant by that, like what were you doing with Tarantino movies that you felt like, you know, wasn't helpful, or what was it that you thought, man, this is just not great. This isn't helping me.
Yeah, I think behaviorally, idolatry can work out in a variety of ways. So I think at the heart of idolatry is this idea that this thing, whatever it is a source of life or the source of life. Getting this, obtaining this, worshiping this, living for this is what animates me, is what gives me the desire to get up another day and do and live. And without that, life loses its purpose, loses its joy, loses its value. And whatever is your idol, you will make sacrifices for. You will sacrifice money for, you will sacrifice your time, your heart, and your affections. So I think for me, it worked out in a lot of ways. I mean, I'm a pretty nerdy guy. So one of the ways the idolatry worked out is I would keep spreadsheets of every movie I ever watched. And I would categorize them by like country. So here's how many Korean films I've seen. Here's how many European films I've seen. So it would work itself out in different ways. And there's a sense in which whatever you're worshiping, there could be correlations to addiction with it in terms of just, yeah, one day without it feels like you start to get a little kind of like itchy or like, ugh, like, can I really go to bed tonight? I haven't kind of filled my quota type of thing. So I think it really is, where do you find life? And I think what we see in scripture is in Matthew 13:44, the parable of that treasure hidden in a field, I think is a good example of worship. And if you're worshiping an idol, that treasure, if that's movies, you're willing to sell everything you have to buy that field to get that treasure. Nothing's going to stop you. No amount of sacrifice is too great to obtain this. Now, obviously, if it's right worship, that's a good trade. You know, you sell all that you have with joy to go and buy that field. But that's the way I would describe it.
So how would you differentiate, just again, for somebody who's trying to navigate how to think about this, you know, how would you distinguish maybe a right way, a healthy way to appreciate movies or anything else? Like what distinguishes a healthy way from maybe an unhealthy way? Like obviously, like if you're, you know, like watching porn, like this is taking this good gift sex that God's given us and we're divorcing it from the context of a intimate relationship with an actual person. And here we are feasting on the digital representations of bodies of untold quantities of women or men. So like, what would distinguish that? If you tried to try to unpack, where does watching a movie go from being quote unquote okay to illicit?
Yeah, you know, the Bible talks about the heart is deceitful above all things, who can understand it? And so I think often we don't even realize it's happening. And so one practical thing could be, if you're not sure where you're at with that, do a fast from whatever activity that is for a week or two and see where you're at. Kind of see how it impacts your life. And I think that's a good starting point to just say, can I take a season and not have this and see what it does? See how I'm feeling, see how my outlook on life is after that. So I think that can really just be a simple way to gauge the value that has in your life. I think a few places in scripture we can are helpful as well is in, I think it's 1 Timothy, Paul talks about, you know, don't reject marriage, don't reject food. These are good things. You know, people who tell you to refrain from them, they're teaching the teachings of demons. So clearly asceticism is not biblical. And it says these things are made holy through the word of God and prayer, and they're to be received with thanksgiving to God. And so I do believe it's a question of, as I do these things, whatever it is, if I watch a movie, if I'm listening to a podcast, if I'm whatever it is there a way in which it's done acknowledging God in it? I'm acknowledging God. I'm thanking him for it. And it's done out of a place where one way I've thought about it is, I am already satisfied in him going into this. Whatever activity I'm going into, it's not this thing that's like, I am empty without this, and now I need to go fill up. It's more of, I'm already in a place of contentment, godly contentment. And this is just a way that I'm going to acknowledge God, enjoy him, thank him through all the good gifts that he gives. And he does give many gifts. And I think the key is that a good gift is meant to enhance the relationship that the giver has to the recipient of that gift, not detract from it. So when a father gives his child a birthday gift, the father wants his child to enjoy the gift. He doesn't want him to say, well, I can't play with that because then that would mess our relationship. It's like, no, enjoy it. Play with the Lego. Do whatever you're going to do. But the ultimate effect of giving that kid the Lego is that their relationship grows, is not detracted. And I think that's where sometimes it's a long-term question is, okay, I've been enjoying this gift of God for a year now. What does my relationship with God look like after a year of enjoying this? Is it deeper or suffering as a result?
Yeah, I think that's helpful. I think the test of like of a fast is a helpful thing. Again, and like this is convicting for me, honestly, because like we talked about this the first time we talked. I think for me, it's the phone, like just like having the phone and just always being connected. And it's easy to justify when, you know, I work largely in social media and I work on the phone and with these things, but like it gets to the point where it's just unhealthy and like my kids will recognize it. My wife will, you know, recognize it. And so I think like the ability to say no, like that just demonstrates. And I think this is, again, maybe the framework that's helpful for people to think through this is that everyone has bosses. The biblical term for them would be lords, you know, lords or gods who basically are there who say yes and also say no. And so, you know, you're mentioning with like Tarantino, this is your point where you're like, hey, you know, Jesus is Lord. Ultimately, Tarantino isn't. And so like Tarantino is saying yes to certain things that I see Jesus saying no to. And so I can't follow two masters. I can't serve Quentin and Jesus. And so I'm going to do this. I think for me, the person who's like this, who, again, I appreciate film as well. And so like one of the people is Paul Thomas Anderson, like incredible, brilliant, but like some of his most famous movies, again, I'm just like, it doesn't make any sense to watch these things just because like he's taking and using this brilliance. It's just basically like we're called to approve of what is good. And I can't remember the actual wording of this, but basically filter out what is evil. And there's just things within some of his stuff, some of his movies, where I'm just like, this is like eating a rock garden that maybe has like one potato in it. It's just like, I'd have to swallow too much things that aren't helping me, that are just not great, in order to benefit and get access to his brilliance. And so, and I think this is an also just thinking about, I have friends who work in film as well. And I just was actually talking to one last night. And I think just thinking about filmmakers as gods is an incredibly helpful and accurate picture, because these are literally people who frame, they create movies where they control every minute detail of what is pictured on screen. They control the color, the lighting, all these things. And so functionally, they are gods who say, let my kingdom come and my will be done, and who like shape and portray a vision of the good life, or, you know, what is real, or the way that the world should be through their eyes. And so these are all things that, you know, these are all compete. They're making competing, or at least they can make competing and rival claims and trying to shape people's hearts and minds of the world. And so I would contrast that. You have people who are trying to, you have directors who are trying to be gods. And then you have directors who I would say are more faithfully trying to be stewards. And so I would think of, he directed A Hidden Life. Do you know that movie? Terrence Malick. And so like somebody like Terrence Malick is, I believe he's a Christian. That movie, A Hidden Life, if you haven't seen it, it's about this guy who during World War II, basically they're telling him he's Austrian, and the Germans are trying to conscript them into service. And he just basically says, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to go. And so he ends up enduring all this suffering because he refuses to go along with what they're asking him to do. And so you see this portrait of this man who is driven by things other than just expediency. And so this is representing a faithful, you know, stewardship of and creative imagination and faithful historically chronicling a real life story of somebody. And so I think there's, you know, not all films are created equal. And so I think that you can approach filmmaking in just like you can film consuming, or you can approach it from a variety of different perspectives that can be either healthy or unhealthy.
Yeah, just two quick things on that. I love what you said. And I think the one thing I would say is as two ways to judge where your heart is at is, I love what you said about, you know, we all have bosses, we all have lords. And if you're in a good place with your worship of God, the true God, then when he says no, it's going to be easier to say, okay, yeah, I don't need to watch this movie. My life isn't going to be over if I don't. The no's become much easier. And you can say, okay, yeah, I'm not ruled by this. I'm not enslaved to what these directors are saying. You have to watch this to be satisfied in life. And say, no becomes easier. The other thing I would say is you do start to appreciate movies for the ways in which they can. Many do point us to the deeper truths of God. And I don't know if I can spoil one movie on this podcast or not, but I actually used it in ministry, and I've used his films often in papers I've written in seminary.
Mark, real quick, spoiling this movie will help people not idolize it. So go for it.
There we go. And hopefully most people have seen it. If you haven't, you maybe deserve it to be spoiled. So I appreciate my new kind of favorite director is Christopher Nolan, and his film Interstellar, I think, is his best, in my opinion. And the movie is all about this relationship of a father with his daughter. And the deeper structure of the film is that the father has said, I'm leaving, but I'm going to come back, but I don't know when. And she is wrestling with deep anger, doubt, really regret, hatred of her father because he's left her to die in a room that is crumbling around her. And there's no way to get any assurance from him that of when he's coming back, if he's even alive. And, you know, there's all this crazy time travel stuff that always happens in Christopher Nolan movies. And long story short, you know, she's really old. She's in like over 100 at the end of the film. And he's still young because of the way the black hole and all that kind of stuff works. And he meets her on her deathbed, basically. And she says, nobody believed me. Nobody believed me that you were going to come back. I knew you would come back. And he says, well, how did you know? And she says, because my father told me so. Because my daddy said so. And it's just like, that blew my mind because on one level, it captured so well the challenge of faith. Faith is a battle. But ultimately, what do we place our faith in? Do we place it in our experience of what we can see right now, or do we place it in a word, in what God has spoken, what he has promised? And it's like, my spiritual heavenly daddy told me so. That is how I know. And I shared that with a man I was ministering to, and it like changed everything for him. He could not see God as father before that. And we would talk about Interstellar then constantly after that.
That's so funny. Again, that's fantastic. Like, that's so good. I appreciate him too. I will say, I cannot in good conscience allow any movie to be claimed as Christopher Nolan's best movie except for The Prestige. I'm sorry. The Prestige is hands down. It's just so good. I love it. I can watch it over and over again. Okay. So let's move into, and let's kind of unpack some of your work, the work that Harvest is doing. So you end up, spoiler alert, getting married. You have kids. You end up moving back to the States at some point. How did you get involved with Harvest?
Yeah. So I do have to clarify, we don't have children. We want children. He hasn't provided yet, but yeah.
I thought you said you had kids.
Yeah. It's a longer story. So we moved back to the States and I go to seminary and get my counseling degree there at Westminster Seminary. And I knew I wanted to do ministry mainly because I was just loving doing ministry in Korea as a volunteer. And I didn't want to teach English the rest of my life. So I decided to do that. But I didn't necessarily feel called to do pastoral ministry in a local church directly. The Lord might still have that in the future, but right now that's not the track. So I did the counseling program as opposed to an MDiv. And when I was in South Korea, the pastor of the church I was attending had a huge heart for sex trafficking issues in Asia. And I did not feel called to move to Thailand to rescue sex slaves. As important as that is, I didn't feel that was the work I was going to do. But I realized the people who go to Thailand to do these things, to take advantage of these people, there's a demand that grew over time. It's like people don't just wake up one day and do that. Typically, probably pornography is the genesis of those types of things. And these types of sins, they always take you further than you ever thought you'd go and keep you there longer than you ever thought you'd be there. So I realized maybe I'm going to address some of the demand side of the way that sexual sin has so many victims, and victims on every level, not only in sex trafficking, but the pornography industry in general is full of victims on so many levels. And so I felt this call that, okay, the Lord's done this work in my own life, in my own heart. Maybe he's going to bring redemptive purposes out of what he's doing. So I finished my counseling degree and I did an internship at a counseling organization called CCEF, which is connected to the seminary. And along with that was doing an internship at Harvest USA. And at Harvest, I was basically doing one-on-one discipleship with men and leading biblical support groups.
So just real quick, CCEF, is that Ed Welch? Is
correct.
He involved?
Yep. Yep. He's one of the faculty.
And then who's the David Powlison? Is that?
Yes. Yeah. David Powlison passed away a few years ago, but he's, yeah, one of the big kind of, not the founder, but kind of the main guy there for a long time.
Yeah. If you're a listener and, I mean, haven't read David Powlison or haven't seen any of his stuff, go. I mean, you can just tell by watching this dude speak. Just like you can get a sense of both his character and stuff. There's times where I'm like, all right, I have to go listen to this guy, like go speak on an issue. He speaks about anger. He speaks about a number of different issues where just his existence, you're just like, wait a second. Okay. It just is kind of like a reset. He's just one of the most calm individuals. Like it's not like he's some, hovering above everything, but he just is a very unique person. He just had a different tenor and, So go look up some of his stuff and benefit from it.
Yeah. And he's got an amazing story of coming to Christ too. His story is amazing. Yeah. So doing an internship at both, and this is kind of God's goodness, is I hadn't touched a video camera for like a decade. And then I go to Harvest and I'm like, oh, you have a background in video. We need some people to do some videos work for us. So while I was an intern at Harvest, I was doing contract video work for them. And what's funny about many industries is when you're out of it for a while, it's changed so much. So I had to like learn so many things from scratch for the first time. So yeah, I still to this day, as the president of the ministry, continue to do our video work. And it probably eventually needs to shift, but I'll explain a little bit more about that at the very end. So yeah, I'm one of the few people I feel like has very different undergrad and graduate degrees and can use them both in my job on a fairly regular basis. So what I was finding at Harvest was, the people who came to Harvest, typically the majority of them are in a pretty desperate place. The destruction of sin is really very evident in their lives and their families. Perhaps they've lost their job. Perhaps they're in a hotel room looking at divorce papers, whatever is the case. And in that place of desperation, you saw God's severe mercy over and over again. And many of them would say, I don't know if I would have changed if God had not let it get to this point. Like he's allowing me to experience the consequences of my sin because I am a legitimate child. You know, that's what's talked about in Hebrews 11 and Proverbs 8 is the fact that you're being disciplined right now in a very painful way shows that he hasn't given up on you. And being able to offer that hope to people was just, you saw lives transformed time and time again in a very, very dramatic way often. Now, again, like that doesn't mean it happens every time with everyone it comes, but there is a sense in which being in these really raw places with people, I just got to see very powerful experiences of God. You know, initially people often come for help because of the consequences, but then seeing how that leads to a deeper heart change. It's not just about my life is painful and I need to change this, but I really, truly love God and want to follow him now. And some of the most profound things were where, for example, these married men come in and they're there initially because they don't want to lose their marriage. But then their marriage still ends and they're still working out their salvation with fear and trembling. So they initially came to save their marriage, but they realize there's something bigger to strive after. So yeah, I can explain a little bit about the ministry. I explained a little bit already, but we do have basically two types of ministry. We do work in our offices, and we mainly do that through one-on-one discipleship. We call it targeted discipleship because we're targeting a very specific area of sanctification. And we minister to men who are struggling, to women who struggle. Women are often assumed in the church, especially, that women aren't struggling with these things. But pornography amongst women especially has had a huge up ramp. And we're not just dealing with pornography issues, really any type of sexual struggle, whether it be same-sex attraction, infidelity, pornography, gender issues. We're going to offer the same gospel, the same hope to everyone. Because one thing we say at Harvest is that we're all much more alike than we are different. And maybe the external behavior might look a certain way for you, but the heart issues are all common to man temptations, is what 1 Corinthians 10:13 says. And so, yeah, we minister to men, to women, specifically the wives of husbands who are struggling. We will minister to husbands as well, but the reality is husbands don't reach out to us that much, but many wives do. And then we minister to parents whose children identify as LGBTQ+. And that is, as you probably know, one of the most explosive ministries we have right now in terms of the volume of parents coming to us. And a lot of that, I think, is the direct result of a lot of the social contagion going on right now, particularly with transgenderism. So that's our direct ministry. And we do biblical support groups for all of those four ministries. And then we also provide resources. We provide books, mini books, articles, blogs, and magazines. And now we just launched a new initiative for online courses. And those are now, we just launched our new website this last week. And on that site, we have two free online courses, and they're aimed at parents, and they're preventative courses, meaning for parents who have young children, and they, how do I raise my child in an environment where so many unbiblical messages about sex and sexuality and identity are coming at them all over the place? And it's interesting, in our parents group, we have parents who homeschool their kids, parents who private school, public school, and they're all getting indoctrinated by the same things. And the common factor in all this is social media and internet exposure. So we have two courses that are aimed at how do you proactively get ahead of all these things and raise your kids. And one of them is called Raising Sexually Faithful Kids. The other one is called Parenting Boys and Girls in a Gender Confused World. We really think these are timely things that we see a lot of demand for.
So are you helping like write some of these curriculums, or is there people from the seminary, you know, from Westminster to local nearby, or like who's kind of helping?
Yeah, really, it's our staff. So I'm one of the people writing some of the material, but we have basically all of our staff who create our resources are practitioners first. And that's really where we're trying to kind of say, like, we're in the trenches with people. We're seeing this firsthand. And out of this ministry, we're seeking to then help the church say, how can you glean from what we're seeing on the ground? But we do hire a lot of our staff through seminaries, a lot of counseling backgrounds and things like that on our staff.
Man, I would love to talk to you like another hour just about like these issues, because again, I think there's a ton of overlap in terms of, again, like what you're describing is social media. There's lots of these things that are the product of either misaligned or nefarious economic incentives. You know, just the nature of, you know, some of these things, you know, they're fostered by a desire to make money. And the message is the nature of social media, the nature of things like YouTube, and just the ability for, you know, people to speak authoritatively and present their, you know, these messages that, you know, have been around for as long as people have been, but that have been in, like, they've been on the fringes, but you know, with having cameras in our pockets that are, you know, HD cameras, all these kind of things, it just basically enables anybody to paint this rosy picture of something that is at core, in actuality, far different. And so, yeah, and to speak authoritatively and speak normatively and normalize things that, again, the day-to-day reality of something like a transition, quote-unquote transition, like the reality of what that looks like is far from the sunshine and rainbows that is portrayed on, you know, by many people on social media and entities.
Yeah, there's a lot of videos on TikTok and other platforms where they'll chronicle their entire transition story. And these videos get 30 million likes or 30 million views, tons of likes. And it is very glamorized. It's interesting because it's both glamorized in terms of, wow, like look at how liberated this person is, but it's also seen as very heroic. And it's painted that way as, a trailblazer, and good for them. They're really doing something very courageous. And yeah, the economic incentives are very obvious. Not all, obviously the pornography industry, incredibly lucrative industry there, but also the transition industry. And one thing that's interesting is, a lot of European countries are banning transition surgery for minors. And I believe one of the reasons they're doing that is because the economic incentives are different there than they are here, where here it's right now currently a $2 billion a year industry and projected to be $5 billion by 2030.
Yeah. And that's 100%. Again, it's like we're, thank God for Bitcoin, again, more than the name, like we're trying to look faithfully at economics more broadly. Bitcoin is one aspect of this, but I just think like this is something that people are just totally underestimating is following the money in terms of the monetary incentives for doctors and hospitals and all these kind of things. If you have somebody who makes the decision to transition, they're now taking these drugs for the rest of their life, these, you know, expensive drugs for the rest of their life. And so it's sources of revenue for these pharmaceutical companies. And so people are acting like these are just interested party. The primary concern is helping people figure out their true self and do all these things, when in reality, there's so much money that's desired on the other side of this. And so I think just kind of shining a light on those issues is one way to help people kind of develop some healthy skepticism and to shine light on something that is far different than it's being portrayed.
Yeah. And on a very like understandable individual level, the incentive of, I don't want to lose my job. I've got to feed my family. And there's so many coercive tactics being used on so many fronts that probably a lot of people don't feel fully comfortable going along, but they feel they have to in order to keep their job. And so I heard, if you know the Colson Center, I just heard John Stonetree say something recently where he said, we need to develop a good theology of getting fired. I thought that was very interesting. And again, these are really hard issues that don't always have easy answers. But I do think the church in general in America is having to face the reality that for the first time in our lifetime, it's not advantageous to be a Christian. And it's a liability now, in a way where it used to be, if you were a faithful member at your church, if you were an officer, you got the job over the person who didn't. And now it's the opposite. And so I think we have to look back at church history and say, okay, the church has been here before, and they probably have some things to teach us about how to remain faithful in an environment such as this.
Yeah, 100%. Are you guys involved officially with the Colson Center, or you listen on your own time to their podcast and stuff?
Yeah, no, we're not officially connected. I would love to be more connected to them. We do go to their conferences and exhibit there. I'll be exhibiting there this year in May. So it's like right before the GA. I'll be at Colson Center and then I'm going to the GA after that. So yeah, we think they're doing a lot of great work.
Do you know Gregory Shane Morris? Do you know him or are familiar with him?
No, I don't think so.
It's either Upstream or Downstream. Sorry, Shane, I can't remember what your podcast is, but it's one of the Colson Center. He works on staff there. He's a friend, and yeah, just appreciate those guys. So shout out to Shane. Mark, thank you so much. Again, hopefully this won't be the last time. We'll have you back soon to kind of go more in depth on some of these issues.
Thank you so much, Jordan. It's a privilege to be with you and love the work you guys are doing.
Yeah. And actually, I'll give you the last word. Kind of tell people where they can find you and find out more about Harvest and anything else you want to share.
Yeah. So I am not personally on social media in terms of posting things or anything like that. So the best thing to do would be, you can check out Harvest USA on a variety of the social media platforms. We're hoping to get better at it. Our audience is pretty small on social media, but the best place to go to would be harvestusa.org. And there you can find all of our resources. If you need help, we do minister via Zoom for people who are not local. So even if you're not in the Philadelphia area, we can provide a measure of support for you. And there's also a lot of resources available, including those two new free online courses for parents. So harvestusa.org. So you should check it out.
Awesome. Guys, go check those things out and benefit from those tools that are available. Again, appreciate you guys listening to Thank God for Bitcoin, and we'll see you again soon. Our mission at TGFB is to help Christians understand and use Bitcoin for the glory of God and the good of people everywhere. We do this through podcasts, books, consulting services, and live events. We love giving away as much of our resources as possible, but we do have real overhead costs, and there are a number of easy ways that you can help us keep the lights on to continue our mission. First, if you're a Bitcoiner, you can listen to the podcast on the Fountain app and stream us sats in real time as you listen to the podcast. Every contribution makes a difference, no matter how small. You can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/TGFB to receive a number of special benefits available only to our Patreon supporters. If you find these conversations valuable, you can also help spread the word by sharing this episode, subscribing on YouTube, and leaving reviews on Apple and Spotify. Leaving us good reviews goes a long way toward ensuring that the algorithmic powers that be look favorably on our humble endeavors. And finally, engage with us on social media. Join the conversation so that we can build a strong community united around faith, freedom, and sound money. We mentioned the TGFB 24 conference on July 24th and 25th in Nashville. You can go grab your tickets at tgfb.com/store. And finally, go check out julianabarbati.com if you have questions about how to start or better your own podcast. We're grateful for your support, and we look forward to seeing you on the next episode of the Thank God for Bitcoin podcast.